Okay. Good morning, everyone. I think we're going to make a start. We're a bit lighter today. A number of people apologize. Not well, weather, etc. So first of all, we just want to welcome everyone back to the new series, the new term, and the new topic. So the topic for this term is: are you from Venus, Mars, or Sinai? Learning to access the feminine and masculine parts of our personality. Now, just a little bit about the topic. I think I'm taking a little bit of a risk with this topic. Firstly, because I'm slightly outnumbered. Second of all, it's a complex topic, but I'm going to ask you if along the way, give me feedback afterwards, tell me if I'm on track or lost the plot, and we'll try and work through this these ideas through the term. So what we're going to do today is actually we need to spend some time understanding the topic. And as always, at the beginning of a series, we normally spend a bit of time on some theory, and hopefully we're able to afterwards translate that into some practical applications and strategies to help us grow as human beings, to help enhance our relationships, etc. So around 1990, I think it was, John Gray wrote his bestseller, right? This one. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Incidentally, in an age where now everything needs to be expressed in technical and technological terminology, I saw an upgraded version of the title in an article I found on the internet titled Men are from Google and Women are from Gmail.com. Anyway, his thesis was that in order for relationships, especially marriages, to succeed, it was critical for people to understand the differences between men and women, between the masculine and the feminine. To understand and to appreciate that they're supposed to be different. And what he proposed was that without that awareness that we're supposed to be different, he said men and women will be at odds with each other. They'll become angry and frustrated with the opposite because we've forgotten this important truth. We expect those that are opposite from us to be just like us, to want what we want and to feel the way we feel. Right? And he said that we mistakenly assume that if our partners really love us, they will react and behave in certain ways, the ways we react and behave when we love someone else. So therefore, he wrote this piece of work, coming out, incidentally, if you look at his introduction, coming out of problems that he had in his own relationship, to help us clearly recognize that when people respect and understand these differences, then it reduces the tension. And he said that when you remember and appreciate that men are from Mars and women are from Venus, everything can be explained. That was his theory. So what he does in his book is he proceeds to explore how men and women communicate differently, how see things differently, how sometimes have completely different realities, handle stress differently, even have different value systems. And of course, he talks in general terms, and he admits and acknowledges that there's generalities and generalizations, and they're not always true, and it's not completely always accurate, and sometimes some males are more female, some females are more male. But on many, many levels, his theories hold true. Now, what I want to explore today, and a little bit today, and then develop it over the coming weeks, is to understand what is the Jewish Torah, the Sinai perspective, hence the topic, are you from Venus, Mars, or Sinai? And to understand what the Jewish view is this, but not just to understand it as a theory, but to understand it in terms of applying it in the way we develop and live as human beings. And what we'll see when we explore the Jewish mystical sources is that on one level, Jewish writing, Jewish literature believes that a lot of what John Gray proposed in his book holds true on many, many levels. But although there's truth in the theory, it takes it to a whole new level. What we're going to see and develop is the following. That in fact, not only is it true, but in the very, very deepest and essential design of creation, right? When God created the world, He created it with two distinct energies. Just hold with me a little bit, because you'll see how this becomes clear in a couple of months. God created the world with two different and distinct energies, two different forces, two different divine emanations, revelations that create the male force and the female force. And then when in creation of the human being, that translates into the male and female personalities, different functions, and even different roles. However, okay, so therefore, to a great extent, Jewish sources would agree with the theory that John Gray proposes in his book and the famous bestseller, Men are from Mars, Women are from Venus, right? I always forget the planets. However, what we're going to understand is that from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, it actually goes a lot deeper. It goes a lot deeper and therefore becomes much more critical to understand and to develop on a number of levels. First of all, his book and his thesis is a thesis of observation. What do I mean? What he did was he surveyed thousands of people. He asked them lots and lots of questions, and then he came to the conclusions that he came to. So it's conclusions based on observation. Torah sources, mystical sources, Jewish sources explain that actually this is not just a superficial concept. The difference between the masculine and the feminine is not just a superficial concept, it's not a consequence of social conditioning, but it's actually part of the very, very fabric of the divine design of the world. Okay. In fact, to take it to a very deep level, just to share with you a mystical concept for a moment, in the writings of the great Kabbalists, they say the following. They teach us that when God created the world, creation began with an infinite divine light. It's called a light in the Kabbalistic literature. A divine energy, the primordial force. And that force, that light, had both merged together, had both male and female components. Okay. And what God did was, He split them into two distinct forces. Okay. And the force of those two distinct energies became the foundation of creation. In fact, therefore, in other words, because that light is the foundation, the divine foundation of the world, Kabbalistically, mystically, it is true that everything in the world is based on this concept. The entire world, the entire universe, the entire creation is based on male and female components. Now you see this in Hebrew. If anyone knows a little bit of Hebrew, you'll notice that in the Hebrew language, both classical and modern Hebrew, every object, everything that exists, is male or female. Do you know that? Right? Different to English, different to other languages. In Hebrew, one of the complicated parts of, although Hebrew is a fairly simple language on one level, but part of the complications of Hebrew is the complexity of conjugation. Right? So when you talk, if you're talking to a female, you've got to use female descriptions, female verbs, female language. If you're talking male, you have to use male, right? But it's not only about people. It's about everything. For example, I'll give you an example. Let's take the word soul. Right? Neshama, right. Now in English, you talk about soul, and you can talk about what it does. Right? The soul, it is. It expresses itself. In Hebrew, you never say it. There's no such thing as it. You say he or she. You realize that? So for example, neshama, for soul is feminine. And therefore you'd always use the term he, which means she. He. I know that, sorry. Yeah.
He, she.
You know, that's right. You know the thing, he, she, who is he, and Doug is a fish? Yeah?
Yeah?
That's right, like who's on first, that's right. Right? You know those three things, yeah? Who is he, she, and Doug is a fish. In Hebrew, a fish is a dog, right? So you use the word he, right? And any verb or any descriptional use for the neshama will be feminine. Because everything in this world, not only people, everything actually goes to the very deepest part of creation. Everything has a dominant force, and that force is either male or female. Now, that's true with everything in the world, but that happens the same thing with the creation of the human being. Now, the story of creation is quite well known, right? People know that God created Adam, Adam went to sleep, he was anesthetized, some sort of surgery, and then a woman was created. But actually, if you look at the midrashic sources, not quite the way it happened. It reads that way, but actually, if you look into the depth of the verses and the complexity of the words, there's a very strong view in midrashic sources that God originally created a being that was both male and female. Right? Had on either side male and female features. And then separated them. And the reason that he did that was because the very essence of the divine source of creation is a divine energy, a divine light that is both male and female. Which, as I said before, Kabbalistically we learn that then God split them and divided them into two distinct forces. The same thing with the creation of the human being, because as the Chumash, as the Torah tells us at the very beginning of Genesis, the human being was created in the image of God. What does that mean? It means many things, but it also means that this concept at the very basis of the human being is a combination of both male and female, which was then separated out. Ever since then, the two are really half existences, yearn for each other, attracted to each other, attracted to the original existence of the divine foundation of the world and the human existence, which is male and female together.
So Hashem also is part male and female.
Correct. People always ask the question about why we always refer to God as male. It's actually not true. There are a number of prayers where we refer to God in the female. Yes. And we might touch on it in the coming weeks because it's relevant to some of the things we're going to discuss, but that is correct. There are... God is undefined, essentially, but when he reveals himself, when he expresses himself, we know he's himself, but there is male and female aspects, correct. Now, why is it so relevant? Why is it important to know that masculinity and femininity actually begin as one force and then are divided up into two distinct forces? Because what we need to understand and learn, and this is where we're going to differ tremendously from John Gray's thesis, is that creation as a whole, creation is a combination of both. Right? And that everything we do, every relationship, every experience, every creation, whether figurative, intellectual, emotional, psychological, physical, every achievement in this world, in this universe, actually requires a combination of two forces. To succeed, to develop, to grow as a human being, one must access two forces, the male and the female. Right? So, for example, in relationships, any relationship, by the way, it's obviously emphasized we have a relationship between male and female, but in every relationship, parent and child, student and teacher, it is not just sufficient to understand the differences. You achieve a great deal if you do. He was right. In other words, the fact that people understand that different people are different and that male and female do operate differently certainly achieves a great deal in helping people understand and appreciate each other and appreciate where they come from. But it's very, very insufficient. Right? It's not enough to say, okay, it's good, I understand, I'm from Venus, you're from Mars, I get it now. Right? So I appreciate you better. The Sinai approach is, so to speak, that actually we need to learn how to access both forces within ourselves. Because what happens is, every person has a dominant force, but every person has both forces. Everything has both forces, but every person has both forces. Meaning, generally female, the dominant personality is a feminine personality, not always, by the way. But generally speaking, in general terms, which is the way we'll speak because that just makes it easier. Right? So don't get me into trouble, because I'm not generalizing and I'm not, you know. But generally, we're not talking about men and women, we're talking about male and female. Right? So generally speaking, women, their dominant force is female. Generally speaking, the dominant force in men is male. But actually, both have both. Because the essence of creation is a combination of both. And therefore, to properly develop and nurture a relationship, to properly create and achieve anything, one must actually learn to use and access and to appreciate the less dominant force within ourselves. Okay? Now, the reason that they were made separate to begin with, right? If the purpose of everything to come together, why did God separate them out to begin with? The reason is very simple. Because when God created the world, because everything needs a combination of the two distinct forces, He separated them into two distinct forces, male and female, to highlight each one, so that each component, each force could be properly appreciated, could be properly defined, could be properly understood, could be properly respected, could be properly used and applied. That's why they become two separate ones to begin with the goal of combining and using them together. Am I making sense so far? Yeah, you're okay? I'll give you a quick example, and we'll develop this in much greater detail in the next coming weeks. But for example, let's take a non-male-female relationship. Let's take a teacher and a student. It can be both female, it can be both male. Right? We'll see in the relationship the giving part is a male aspect, the receiving is a female. And we'll develop that soon. But that's why sometimes men find it very hard to give and women find it very hard to receive, because there's always a tendency not to use your dominant force properly, but we'll get to that in a minute. But in a teacher-student relationship, for example, very often it's a one-sided relationship. Very often the teacher gives and the student receives. And doesn't work. Because although the dominant process, the dominant experience of that relationship should be that the teacher should give and the student should receive, the teacher teaches and the student learns. But actually, and we'll try and develop this with parents and children, the same thing. Parents and children the same way. Right? Parents need to give, children need to receive. But if we don't learn how to do both, if we don't learn how to actually access both, that we don't learn in a relationship of parents and children, for example, that actually parents need to receive as well as give, and children need to learn to give as well as receive, the relationship will break down. So that's just a quick example of how in a relationship, actually both need both. Both need to understand the dominant force within themselves. Both need to understand their primary role. That's important. That's very important, just as important as learning to do both. Because it's not a good idea to be what you aren't, and it's not a good idea to substitute your role with something else. But at the same time, because the basis and foundation of creation is that it's a combination of both, both need to learn how to do both. So the parent needs to learn to give, the parent and teacher needs to learn to receive, the student and child needs to learn to give as well. So, what we need to do then for the remainder of today is as follows. What we need to do is try and understand what is the definition of masculinity, what is the definition of femininity, what is the male, what is the female. Right? That's why I said it'll be a little bit theoretical, because it's important to understand what they are from a mystical point of view, from a Jewish point of view. And when we understand what each one is, then over the next few weeks we can translate that and understand that in different contexts, and how we nurture relationships, of how we cope with stress, how we communicate, how we process cognitively, how we resolve problems, right? We'll see how that how the basic definition that we're going to establish today holds true in everything. But then, once we understand how the male and the female operate in every part of life, we then need to learn, and we'll develop this over the next few weeks, we need to learn how to identify that force that we don't have as a dominant force and learn to use it. In other words, if a man has his dominant force as masculinity, the man has to learn how to use the feminine side of his soul, and the female the same way. So, just before we proceed, I'll just give you a little example. I mean, I was going to do a whole activity, but I don't think it'll work in this crowd. But just turn over your handout. Just give you a couple of seconds. Look at all these words, and they're not in any particular order, so it doesn't follow a pattern intentionally. And just see if any one of these words resonate with you as being either male or female. Okay. If you don't understand it properly now, hopefully by the end of today, or certainly by the end of a few weeks, you will. Okay. Does it make any sense? Yeah? Okay. Let's understand this. What I'm going to share with you now is a mystical concept, a Kabbalistic concept, spoken about in the writings of the great Kabbalists called the Arizal and others. What the mystics explain, that the male and female forces in their purest form, what I mean in the purest form is, I'm going to give it to you in its purest form, and then we'll see how that translates in every single part of life. In its purest form, it's as follows. The masculine, the male force, this is the definition. The male force is the ability to generate an energy of newness. Okay? Meaning that the male's ability and desire, for that matter, right, is to continually, in an infinite way, create and generate what they refer to as sparks of infinite potential. Now, I know it's very theoretical, we'll work on it. Right? In other words, the male force generates and creates sparks of ideas, things, concepts that have infinite potential. Okay? And the male force, what it does is, what it desires to do is, as soon as it's created a spark of potential, something new, that new concept, that new spark is short-lived. That's where it begins, that's where it ends. And if nothing's done with it, it will very quickly disappear. That is the male force. What is the feminine force? What is femininity? The feminine force, Kabbalistically, is to take a spark of potential, one spark at a time, that has already been created, and before it dies or disappears, to cultivate it, to see it through, to process it, to translate it into something tangible, real, practical, something that's relevant, something that can actually be applied and used. The female will process something, a spark, an idea, into many different facets, into many different compartments, many different perspectives, and build a whole building. When God created the woman in Genesis, meaning when he separated the woman, in other words, from the male, the terminology used in the Chumash is vayiven, he built. Right? Not created, he built. Creation of something small and new and infinite is masculine. Building on that foundation, on that creation, is feminine. I remember, I'll tell you a little story. When I went to school, I was from an observant family. We went to a non-co-ed school, a boys' school. And often in the summer, I mean, I had a couple of sisters and that, but generally my primary interaction was with boys. In the summertime, we'd go to camp. And as I got older, I learned to become a madrich, a counselor in camp. So we'd have boys' camps and girls' camps, which were normally on two different campuses. This story was my introduction to understanding the difference between the masculine and the feminine. Now, I understand this in general terms, but always stick with me. Always remember this. And I actually wasn't a very good madrich, I have to say. I was before. No, that's just the truth. I was always nervous, and it was before I did any teacher training, and I didn't like it. I didn't enjoy it. I never enjoyed camp. But anyway, that was the fact. It was the thing that everyone did, so I did it too. I didn't enjoy it because I used to find it very stressful. The reason I used to find it really stressful was because I had a bunch of these Wilde Chaya boys who needed to be occupied every single second. That unbelievable. It was like they were. If you didn't devise a program for them 24 hours a day, like if you dropped them out for 5 seconds, they'd destroy something. You do. If they weren't occupied, a window would be broken. They weren't occupied for 10 minutes, a door would be broken. I mean, it was like unbelievable. I mean, obviously, I had a lot to do with my management skills, but nevertheless, that was the truth. Aggressiveness. Running around, not being able to focus on one activity more than about 3.5 seconds, unless, of course, it was sport and you were running and fighting, etc., etc. And one day, and it used to drive me mad, like it was stressful. I used to find it very, very exhausting. And one day, we went on a trip, a camp trip. And part of the camp trip, we were going to a park, we were eating lunch. And of course, they took about 4 seconds to devour their sandwiches. Before we could even get them to sit down and bench, they were out on the field, running around, driving everyone crazy. But at the same time, on the same day, the girls' camp happened to be taking a similar trip. And they were in a park right next to us. So I decided, I wonder what it is to take care of a girls' group of kids. And it was an amazing thing, amazing revelation. I saw these group of girls, after they finished lunch, sit down, and talk. And their counselor, their madricha, left them for a few minutes. I would never do such a thing. Right. And a miracle happened. They didn't run around. They didn't break any windows. They kept talking. It was an amazing thing. What were they talking about? I don't know. I couldn't hear. But it was... They were sharing, they were laughing, they were conversing, they were taking something that they've been onto for the last 2 hours and just kept on processing it. They kept on. And I thought, oh, it must be great to be a girl madricha. I didn't apply to become a counselor in a girls' camp, but I just gave up camp altogether. What's the idea? It's like, because females, the female ability is to process. And to process, the ability means that you can actually stay with something for a while. You actually don't have to run from one thing to another. Something can take a long time. You can take a feeling, you can take a concept, and you can process it. You can develop it. You can nurture it. It can be an end in itself. You can build a concept. You can build an idea. You can just process for the sake of processing. The male couldn't do that. The boys had to have something new every second. They had to be somewhere else. You see, one of the ways that some of the mystics talk about this is that males are lines and females are circles. This is a bit simplistic, but this is one way to understand it. What does that mean? By the way, this is actually quite an amazing concept. In a wedding, we won't go into detail now, but in a wedding there's lines and circles, and normally the lines have to do with the men and the circles have to do with women, which is interesting. But a man has to go from point A to point B. A man doesn't absorb and internalize. Again, I'm using generalization. Okay, I'm saying man, women, but I mean the male and the female. A man goes from point A to point B because he's always got to go to something else. always got to project into something else. It has a beginning and an end. When it ends, it has to be a new line. A circle doesn't do that. A circle remains within. A circle can be circular and it can keep going and has no end. It can be internal. It can be within, and it can take an idea and not have to go out and create something new, but develop from within. Is this making sense? Is this clear?
Yeah.
That's why it has no end, and that's why it's circular. The Kabbalists further tell us an interesting thing, that when you want to understand something psychologically or emotionally or spiritually particularly, the way to look at it is from the physical. There's a verse that tells us, "Umipsari erzei loka," which means when we want to look at something divine, we look at our own physical bodies or our own physical experiences, because we have a spiritual, we have a concept that the physical is a reflection of the spiritual. Meaning the physical world and how it works is a reflection of how it works on all levels. The way God created the world is that there's an evolution process. I don't mean Darwinism, I mean there's a divine evolution process, that it starts off from a divine energy, it evolves into spirituality, into the intellect, into the spiritual, into the psychological, into the emotional, and the last stop is the physical. But actually the forces of creation actually are translated and evolved on every level in exactly the same way. Right? And therefore, if you want to know how things work on all levels, often the way to look at it is to understand how it works in the physical. And when you understand how it works in the physical, you work backwards and you understand that's how it works on all levels. Emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, intellectually, etc. So we know that in the physical world, this is exactly how this works. What is the ultimate, when two people get married, when there's a marriage, and a marriage of course is the model of the merger between male and female. As I said, all relationships are really, but marriage where we see it in an emphasized way, where the male and female come together as one. You know, we know this mystical concept that there's two half souls, and this is where the soulmate concept comes from, because really it's part of one original, one entity that was split into two distinct forces, and then becomes one. It's not just a romantic thing of there was one soul and it was split into two and they're looking for each other. It actually goes a lot deeper than that. It goes back to the very essence and the primordial force of creation, that it was always one, and then the male and female got distinct, differentiated into two. Right? So when they come together, therefore, there are two halves coming together as one in marriage. Where in the physical world is the ultimate merge between male and female? In the creation of a child, right? In birth. Which, by the way, is on a spiritual level, is the ultimate bond of every relationship. Every relationship needs to give birth to something. The idea of two people relating with each other is to create a third thing, any relationship. Right? Any relationship is two forces come together to create something new. That newness might be a concept, it might be an idea, it might be an experience, might be a plan, a project, whatever it is. But it's the... And that child, whether it's the physical child or the figurative child or the spiritual child, that child is a consequence, is a creation of male and female coming together. So if we look at the physical, we know, of course, that the contribution of the male is exactly the concept which we were talking about. The contribution of the male is infinite, but short-lived. We know that physiologically, scientifically, the seed of the male is millions. Right. But it's only potential. That's what it is. It is potential. It's created potential. The male generates that concept, that newness, that creative force, which coming from a different world. Right. We know that the creation of a physical child is a divine power. We are taught in the Kabbalistic sources. The male makes the entry from the world of the hidden into the world of the revealed in a split second with infinite potential, millions of potential. That's the male contribution. The female's contribution takes a lot longer. The female picks up on one or two or sometimes more potential and develops it. It takes 9 months. Right? So that's the physical manifestation of this idea. The physical manifestation of this concept is it holds true on every level. Where the woman will then process, develop, nurture, carry. It develops into a human being of all different components, different parts of the body, different parts of the makeup, different parts of the personality. Takes a long time, and the consequence, the ultimate result, is the birth of a child. So this is the purest definition, which we'll then see a little bit today and more so in the next few weeks, of how this translates into everything, into the way we think, into the way we cope with stress, the way we communicate, and every part of life. We'll see that the male component is defined by this definition, and the female by the way we just explained it, right? So therefore, this is the concept in summary, that the male creates newness, potential, sparks the potential in an infinite way. The female picks up on the potential, cultivates it, nurtures it, stays with it, develops it, and creates. Brings it down into something real and practical. I saw somewhere, every different sources describe the female and the male in different ways. And they probably all hold true by this definition on some level or another. But in some article I saw it summarized in the following way, that men, the male is lightning and the women are gravity. Right? Another way to put it. Same sort of idea. Lightning is quick, it's new, it's a flash, it's creative, it's a force, and it's gone. Whereas gravity brings it down, draws it down, holds it there, makes it stay, and lets it be absorbed and internalizes and cultivates it.
Gravity doesn't bring lightning down.
Correct, but it's just an imagery to help us make understand.
So would that be right to say that the male would be hot mark and the female?
That's very good. You're jumping ahead a few weeks. Yes, that is true. Yeah, exactly.
You can hear things.
We will talk about this, because actually it's a very important thing to understand, because it's what Marshall was just asking is that we've spoken about this a long time ago, about the two forces, the two primary forces of cognitive thinking, which is what we call Chochmah and Bina. Right? Chochmah and Bina. And it is 100% true that the male aspect is Chochmah and the female is Bina. But we'll leave it for today, because we're going to talk about it. It's a very important part of this whole process. Because how we think is very often how we act and how we relate. And the problem is that very often men think Chochmah and women think Bina, but actually everyone has to think both. Everyone has to learn to access both forms of thinking in order to really communicate with each other. Because obviously our thought process is the basis of our communication. And that is 100% true, and that's something we certainly can develop. Right? Once we understand this definition, and I said today was going to be much more theoretical, but once we understand this, then we'll understand a lot of different parts of how we communicate and how life takes it. I mean, communication is a typical example, right? We know that generally men... Again, generalization, but generally men communicate in monosyllables, you know. Right?
Or
with a shrug. Yeah, or no syllables. Right? Which is even more frustrating, I understand. But the reason is very simple. Because if a man needs to communicate a concept, once he creates the concept, he's gone. There's no need to develop the concept.
I spend
2 seconds. Right? That concept doesn't have, that's right, that's exactly right. That concept does not have a very long lifespan. You ask a very, very complicated question. The answer to that question is the creation of an idea. The idea takes a millionth of a second to say, a half a word or a shrug, and it's done. He's gone to something else.
Yeah.
Why bother staying there if we can now move on to something else?
He's done his duty.
That's right. The male has created the concept, and now we're moving on. Right? Women, females, normally are able to communicate much more effectively. Because in we know in Kabbalah, Dibur, speech, those of you who remember what Malchus is, right? Dibur is synonymous with Malchus. Dibur, speech, communication, is the ability to process something. That's what communication is. Men are not good processors. Women could process something. Understand? Communication means to take something, to develop it, to stay there, to move there, to let it grow, to let it be understood, to let it be appreciated, to let it be nurtured. That's why in communication, it's a much more of a feminine thing to communicate properly. Right? It's something that men need to learn how to do. It's something that women need to appreciate the male side of that communication as well, as we'll develop over the next few weeks. You know, one of the most famous complaints, of course, in relationships, and this is something that John Gray starts off with his book, and it's in so many different articles, is the different responses to a problem, right? Famous scenario, husband comes home, comes into the house, asks his wife, is in complete mess. This can happen the other way too, but this is the scenario. He asks what's up, and she starts to explode. You don't know what kind of day I've had. You know, the car broke down, and the thing was late, and the kids were sick. And top of all, I went to the office, and my boss was the meanest and cruelest and low life as he always is. He just doesn't understand. He doesn't appreciate. He doesn't this. He doesn't that. What does the husband do? I've told you a million times to leave your job. Right? He fixes the problem. Right? We know this. This is the famous complaint that a woman wants her feelings validated and wants to be listened to, and a man wants to fix the problem. Right? And very often, we laugh, but very often, this type of communication, in all types of relationships, is the source of tremendous stress and tremendous tension. It's a fact, right? It's reality. He's 100% right in his book, that this is a source of tremendous tension. But where does this come from? It comes from the same male and female distinction. Because the wife turns around to him and says, all frustrated, and says, I actually didn't ask for career advice. You know? I'm telling you about my day. I'm actually perfectly happy at my job. Right? This wasn't a session where you consult someone who's a career expert. We're developing the day. We're trying to define the day. We're making the day be understood. What's the difference what kind of job it is? Right? The man doesn't understand that. Sees a problem, let's create a new solution and move on. Like, let's just get it done and finished. Right? Wait, what's that?
That's why we have girlfriends.
Yeah, that's right. That's an interesting comment, actually. That's a great comment. Right? Someone made a comment, and that's why women have girlfriends, right? Now, while that is true, you know, they say, by the way, they say what the definition of a male best friend and a woman best friend. I mean, I know, because, you know, we've lived far away for a long time, right? You ask a man, who's your closest friend? He gives you a name of someone he hasn't talked to for 15 years, right? This is true, by the way. I know, I was in yeshiva for a number of years with a colleague of mine, right? I was in yeshiva with a colleague of mine. His name is Shalom Reichik. If he ever hears the tape, he'd get a good laugh out of this. And we were very, very close friends. Now, I moved to Australia over 20 years ago. He lives in Baltimore, in Maryland. Right? When I travel to New York, he's normally not there. We speak about four times a year. We are very close friends. I'm serious. I mean, it is true. When I married off my daughter a few months ago in New York, it wasn't a question. Of course he was going to come. Another friend came from Toronto. I haven't spoken to the guy in years. Right? Yes, of course he came. Without a question. It wasn't a question. Right? I mean, we married from his first child. If I'm able to, I'd probably go from here. We are really, you think it's a joke? We're very close. Right? I mean, we accomplished it in 5 minutes, but we... Right? If you ask a woman who's your very, very close friend, it's the person that she relates to now. Right? Because generally women find that very difficult to cultivate a friendship across... I mean, nowadays with Skype and cheap phone calls, it's a bit easier, but... Right? But that's very, very reflective of the, right, of the male and female type personality. So the comment I made before is that's why women have girlfriends. Now that's true, and that's probably very important, and there's certainly a lot to be said for female relationships and men friendships, etc. However, the sad part of your comment is that, and this is the crux of what we're going to talk about. The sad part of the comment is that sometimes we actually get very frustrated with the lack of understanding of the male and female merger, that we look elsewhere to find what we need. Now, it is tremendous for women to have girl to you know other female friends. But if it becomes a substitute for the marriage relationship, it's actually quite sad. And that's why, while it is true that a man will never become a woman and a woman will never become a man, however, both need to understand each other and both need to cultivate. Men do need to learn to talk more. It's a fact. Men in a marriage, a man needs to learn to communicate. He needs to discover, he needs to access the female component of communication within his marriage. There's no question about that, and we're going to try and develop this because it's such an important thing. Women need to have that access to the male sort of part of their communication as well, right, in order for it to work. So, of course, it'll be much more emphasized in a girlfriend relationship, but it cannot be a complete substitute for a marriage, because that's unfortunate, it's not healthy. Yeah. We also, this translates into so many different things of how people relate to stress, for example, and again, we'll develop this. I mean, when a man comes home and you ask him, and you can see he's had a terrible, terrible day. How was your day? Well, okay. What's wrong? Nothing. Or the best is, listen, I'm in a bad mood, don't bother me. Or, I don't know, I've got to distract myself, let me just go and watch television, or let me go take a drink, whatever, right? Men crawl into their cave. Why? Because a man comes home all stressed, doesn't have a solution for his problem, it's not worth talking about. It's not worth talking about. If a man cannot create a new solution, if there's no spark of potential to solve this crisis, then I shut down. I go back into my cave.
So you're saying men don't process?
No, generally not. I mean, the male doesn't process. But again, some men are very good processors, but that female aspect, right? Processing is a female component. It's a female attribute.
So men who do process, that's the female side of them.
Very, yes. Look, you should understand that this is a very... Because... I should make something very clear, and it'll become much more clear over the next few weeks. That because the male and female distinction started off as one, and that's a very important mystical concept, that's why it's so complex. Right? It is not two separate things. It is part of one ultimate creation, one ultimate being, one ultimate force. And therefore, it's a very layered and complex issue, and that's why it is inaccurate and normally wrong to completely generalize. Although we do find a dominance in both men and women, but it is wrong to generalize because many men are very male but have a lot of female aspects to them, and the same thing with women. So therefore, the purpose of our discussion is not going to be to describe men and women, and it's not a book on men from Venus, women from, or the other way around, whatever. But I'm never going to try. But women from Venus, that's right. I've never been to Mars or Venus. I couldn't tell you why one's different. But right. But the purpose is going to be to understand within ourselves both components. That's the purpose, and to learn to use both. Right. Because it is so unhealthy, for example. It's okay in a marriage for a man to be the man, woman to be the woman, but for example, we know how unhealthy it is and how often it even leads to physical weakness, or physical stress or illness, where someone cannot process their problems, right? Cannot communicate. We also know how sometimes it can be unhealthy to completely ad infinitum process your problem without ever finding a solution. That can be a woman thing sometimes, that's also unhealthy, right? Women sometimes need to learn to go around the circle, but then to arrive at some sort of resolution. Men need to learn to communicate. So therefore, it is true in so many different parts of life. Yeah.
Is there like an attraction between the masculine and the feminine?
Absolutely.
Energies? And also because although like women and men can be attracted to each other, it seems that only men are some men are attracted to some women and vice versa. Like, it's not generally that all women are attracted to all
correct,
men.
Yeah, correct. So the reason that there's a general concept of attraction between men and women is because they start off as one entity, right? And we're divided into two. The reason why people are only attracted to certain women or to certain men is because that has to do with a lot of other aspects of their personality. Sometimes it's for the same reason that the general attraction exists. What happens is as follows. I think I once explained this, that people are actually attracted. You know, why do people, some people say opposites attract, right? You know what the statistics of that is, by the way? Opposites do attract and last about 3 months. Why? You are attracted to someone who's opposite to you, and then you actually become quite sickened by them. Why is that? There's a lot of tension. No, there's a reason for that. The reason is, psychologically apparently, the reason is as follows. Because a person is attracted to someone else who possesses an unresolved part of their own personality. Right? What happens is that we all have polished parts of our personalities and unpolished parts, right? We all have processed parts and those that are very unrefined and untrained and underdeveloped. And a person needs to nurture and develop and resolve those weak spots and those patchy parts of their own personality. And what happens is we don't like to confront it within ourselves, but it normally is highlighted in someone else. Because what happens is, what we see in ourselves, we see in someone else. Sometimes we see it as a criticism, sometimes we're actually attracted to it, because it's actually part of us that we really need to resolve, but we haven't. The problem is that when we're attracted to it, it doesn't resolve either. Right? If we don't resolve within ourselves, then we're not able to resolve within the other person, and it normally creates friction. Which is exactly the same thing that happens with regard to the relationship between men and women. Men and women are attracted to each other specifically because it's the non-dominant force. Because we all come from the same dual energy of male and female. We then have a dominant force within ourselves, which is male or female, and we're attracted to the opposite. The problem is that if we don't learn to deal with the non-dominant force within ourselves, we can't deal with it ultimately in the other person either. And that's why it needs to be so much developed within ourselves as well. And that's why it's so important to recognize and to develop and to nurture both male and female personality aspects within ourselves as well, not only to appreciate them in someone else. So that's the summary of the concept, and that's what we're going to try and develop over the next few weeks. Every week we'll talk about another part of our human experience, understand the male and female aspects of that experience, and try and understand what is it to use both. Before we finish, if I can just once again mention, we're coming actually close to, first of all, to thank all those that have bought raffle tickets. We're coming very close to the end of the raffle draw. There's still some tickets left. I'm going to urge everyone to rush. It's going to be drawn a week from Monday night. If I can urge all those that haven't bought to see the office, if you have bought, maybe to buy another one. But please rush, because it is towards the end, and have a great day and a great week.
Thank you.